Hi, I'm Leanne Ward.
And I'm Susie Burrell.
And welcome to The Nutrition Couch, a weekly podcast from two of Australia's leading dietitians, bringing you everything that is new in the world of nutrition, diets, and good food. From The Nutrition Couch today, the bubble tea craze. What is bubble tea? Is it actually healthy for us? And why have Aussie shoppers gone absolutely nuts for this new product? Our clinic question of the week is all about immunity. How can we optimize our changes for staying healthy this winter via our food choices? We found a low-calorie frozen yogurt treat for you guys, and you guys are going to love it. And our listener question is all about plant-based meats. Are they actually a healthier option than the real thing? But first, Susie, how are the school holidays going, and are you missing packing those lunchboxes for the twins?
First of all, I want to say that you may notice my voice is a little off today, and quite possibly because it is school holidays and maybe because I've been screaming at the twins too much. So we did debate whether we should record today, and we decided to go with it even though my voice isn't perfect. So I want everyone to be patient with us because we could have skipped an episode, but we know you would have been disappointed. So I'm aware the voice is a little bit off, so just bear with me and hopefully I'll be back to normal next week. So that's a little bit of background there. But I am loving sleeping in, Leanne. I never thought when the kids went to kindy it would be so much work. And I just urge all the younger women out there who haven't had kids yet, enjoy the time before the kids go to school because you think it's tough, but you don't have to rush to daycare. You don't have to pack a lunchbox. Whereas if you're at school, it's like another job. And so I am loving having a break in the middle of the year, getting out with the twins, not having to get up at the crack of dawn, not having to think of the lunchboxes. And for all the girls out there who are waiting to have their children, you enjoy this time because let me tell you, kindy is like a whole nother job.
Love it. And I love that you've been powering on through this podcast with your voice, Susie. So thank you for that. And this week we are going to start chatting about bubble teas. So bubble teas have been around for quite a long time, maybe not perhaps in Australia. They originated in Taiwan and they've been, you know, quite big through, I would say, Asia. When I've got a lot of family, my mum's Malaysian. When we've traveled to Malaysia, Singapore, parts of China before, you know, I've had these for years now. They're absolutely delicious. But Susie, for our listeners at home, what is a bubble tea and why are they trending in mainstream Australian media as a huge topic at the moment? Why is everyone so interested in bubble teas?
Well, I think the big turning point for bubble tea was that it started to be available in supermarket. So it sort of got a whole new hype because I think there was a bubble tea community. So in a shopping centre, in food courts, you would often see these teas. Now, you probably know a little bit more about them than I do, but my understanding is they're a sweetened tea, but it's the presence of tapioca flour that makes the little balls, a gel-like ball that goes at the bottom of these teas and hence the name bubble tea. And young kids and young people seem to love them. Mm-hmm. Now, I, as a dietitian, I hate them because without even having a close look at them for some time, I had always just assumed they were packed full of sugar. And when we've prepared for this podcast today, I'm actually shocked how much sugar some of them have, like up to 6-8 teaspoons per serve for a product that you get from the food court, even up to 4 teaspoons for some of the supermarket brands. As a dietitian, I do not like sweet drinks in general, and bubble teas for me are no different. So I'm going to upset a lot of people, I think, in saying that. But nutritionally, they are really concentrated sugar. And obviously, there's a novel aspect and people love new things. But nutritionally, I'm really struggling to find anything that I like about this product. Am I on my own in the diet corner? Tell me.
Look, as a dietitian, I do not recommend them for my clients for health or for weight loss. But as David's wife, I must say I love them because he's obsessed with them. He loves them as well. We do enjoy them, but I actually scour the menu. So I don't get the traditional bubble milk tea, which is like the very traditional one most people would get. And I actually find that one quite enjoyable because it is based on soy milk. So it's low lactose. Because I remember the first time I ordered that, I actually asked for a lactose-free milk and the guy said, oh no, it is lactose-free. So I think that's why it's got such a big trend throughout Asia as well, because they're quite well tolerated. But I agree, the amount of sugar in them is appalling. The first time I ever ordered one, I just said, I'll just have, you know, the one that everybody seems to be drinking. I just wanted to try it out, Susie. I thought, this is fun. This is novel. I added coconut jelly into mine as well. You know, double whammy. I had the pearls and the coconut jelly. Tasted delicious, I must say. Susie's doesn't want to buy it.
Oh, sounds horrific.
It was delicious. But then I looked at the nutritionals after I drank the entire huge thing of it and nearly died. I think there was about 700 calories in the one that I ordered and swore that I would never do that again. And you're supposed to choose, well, the place that I went anyway, you could choose how much ice and how much sugar you wanted. So naturally I was like, no sugar. And it was so sweet even without the sugar. And I remember the next time I went back and I said to the guy, do people normally get sugar? He goes, oh yeah, people get sugar. And I was like, how interesting. Like, it's loaded with sugar, but people actually can order more sugar on top of that. Then the more tapioca pearls and the coconut jellies and that sort of thing you add into it, of course, you know, the better it is. So my standard bubble tea order is generally either one of the green teas or one of the passion fruit teas, which is actually quite low sugar. I like the passion fruit one because it's actually got a bit of pulp in there. So there's a bit of fiber in there as well. I don't get the coconut jelly anymore because that's quite high in sugar as well. I do get sort of like a half serve of the tapioca pearls. Obviously no sugar and very little ice as well is my standard order, Susie. But you're right in saying that it is absolutely packed with sugar. And this reminds me of a media article I saw probably about a month ago now where there was a teenager in China who actually ended up in the ICU after drinking multiple bubble teas. So the headline was, teenage girl left in a coma after having two bubble tea drinks every single day. So she was admitted into ED, so the emergency department, basically unconscious. Her family found her unconscious and she had diabetic ketoacidosis, so DKA. So her sugar levels were incredibly high, over 25 times the normal limit. So in the weeks leading up to that, her family said she'd been super nauseous, she'd been urinating a lot, she'd been really thirsty all week. These are all signs of undiagnosed diabetes, essentially, and DKA. So she actually, they put her into a coma for 5 days. She was lucky enough to wake up after being on hemodialysis for 5 days as well. I don't think she suffered any sort of lasting side effects after her coma and ICU stay, but they were saying that in the month that she was in hospital, she lost 35 kilos. She was a big teenager. She was over 100 kilos. And she used to drink two of these bubble teas every single day. And I don't think the Australian version is as bad in terms of bubble tea, but the article I'm reading says that the shop she went to, a typical 750ml cup of bubble tea, that's quite large, 750ml, contains 99 grams of sugar, Susie. 99 grams of sugar. That's 20 single packets of white sugar. It's like having a ginormous coffee and putting 20 sachets of sugar into it. It's mental. And she was having two of them a day.
Well, as a reference point, the recommendation from the World Health Organization is that adults consume no more than 25 grams of added sugars per day, which is the equivalent of about 6 teaspoons of sugar. So you can see what a huge load. And who would have thought that Leanne Ward would have a routine order at the bubble tea shop? So it just shocked me. But I've
very
got here
occasionally,
I've got here an ingredient list from one of the products you can get, just to give you an idea that this is not something that we would ever regard as overly healthy. So there's tapioca flour, sugar, potato starch, thickeners, flavor sachet, glucose syrup, sweeteners, medium chain triglycerides, black tea extract, flavors, colors. Like, it's a heavily, heavily processed product. Do you think there'd be caffeine? Would there be any caffeine if there's a little bit of black tea powder?
Yeah, I think they're based on actual black tea and green tea. So I think there would be small amounts of caffeine. But I agree. It's a total, what I like to call a soul food for me. So it's not something I have regularly. It's something I have as a little bit of a treat. I absolutely would treat it as, you know, like I wouldn't be having my normal morning tea or my normal afternoon tea with that as well. It's quite filling, but it is absolutely something that I might have every couple of months as a real just treat or enjoyment. Like I might have a croissant or something like that. Definitely not something that we would put in the every time I visit a supermarket, I have to get one kind of bag.
And what I would say is that I think there's a couple of things going on in my mind about this kind of product. So first of all, when it is in a shopping center as a specialty kind of product, it's occasional, it attracts the teenagers. But I think when it starts to become part of routine supermarket shopping, that's when it's like, let's call it for what it is. It's pretty high in sugar and it's not something that we would recommend consuming on a regular basis. Now, my big concern for my clients is that human beings are not programmed to drink sweet liquid. What happens is, even if we're having lower sugar products, even if we're having sweetened products as opposed to the real thing, we know that it programs the brain to want more and more sweet food. So it's the programming effect of having these sugary liquids in our day, in our diet, which is so heavily linked to eating behavior. And also in this case where it's actually sugar, fat deposits in the liver. And I think we need to be really clear about that, because the issue is that when we start to see sweet drinks all the time, whether it's hot chocolate drinks, whether it's smoothies, whether it's fruit juices in the case of bubble teas, all the time we're getting programmed to always look for sweet flavors whenever we're having a liquid. And I can't stress enough how bad that is for our health. And even in the case where you might go to a bubble tea shop and see one that says no added sugar, which means they're generally using sweeteners. So in the case of the one I've got in front of me, it's using erythritol as a sweetener and stevia. Now, I don't want to pretend that that is actually better than sugar for the effect it's having on programming you to want more sweet food, even though it's not adding calories. So let's be very clear on that. Sweet liquids are not good for any of us, particularly children. And in the case of these bubble teas, it's often teenagers who like it. Now, the biggest consumer of sweetened beverages are teenage boys. They consume, I think from memory, it's about 600 ml per day of sweetened liquid. Now, that is already going to be putting fat deposits in their liver. So even though they may be young, they may be lean, they may be burning it off, getting your kids addicted and a big fan of these sweet drinks is not a good idea. So as a parent, I wouldn't be saying, oh, have it as a treat, because then they want it more and they're getting in a habit of having it. I want to be very clear. My recommendation is the less of these sweet drinks you have, the better, particularly for children and adolescents, because this is where programmed eating behavior starts and then they want it all the time. And that's one of the key reasons we have weight issues in Australia, is that off the back of sweet drinks.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And then we're actually seeing these things pop up in the supermarket as well, Susie. So there's been almost like in how you get, the sachets of coffee in that same aisle. We're seeing things pop up such as sachets of bubble tea now, where you literally just have to add, hot water to it and microwave it and add the tapioca pearls into it. So the convenience is it's no longer just an occasional treat at the supermarket. They're actually popping up in the supermarkets. You could have them every day if you wanted to as well. So that's just, I guess, something to monitor, I guess, if your parents at home, or even if you yourself are trying to be healthy, lose some weight, that sort of thing. Just these things where out of sight, out of mind is actually easier, rather than trying to buy those things, have them in the cupboard and avoid that temptation, because eventually we're only human. That temptation is going to wear us down eventually.
So bubble tea, keep it away. Not a fan.
It's a no-go from Susie, guys.
No-go from me. Sorry. So moving on from sugary drinks, maybe to something pertinent to a lot of us at the moment, it's all about immunity. And definitely in the past 12 months, I have never written more about immunity in my work off the back of COVID. And I think the temperatures have dropped. We're really keen to keep as healthy as possible. So I thought it would be a great time to talk about what is the science around our food and immunity, and what are some immune boosting tips for our listeners. And I know, as dietitians, we're very reluctant to talk about boosting immunity, because we know you actually can't boost your immunity. But what you can do is give your natural immune system the best chance of being at its best. So giving it the nutrients that it needs to function at its best should we come in contact with infection or colds, and giving it the best chance of recovering quickly. When we look at the science, there's a couple of key things. The things that I know come up are, there's a little bit of evidence around soup. And so chicken soup for the soul did have a scientific basis. And that is based on the research to show that bones, when you make a bone broth as the base of a soup, in which not you've bought a supermarket stock, but you've actually had a chicken bones or leftover bones and made a stock from that and skimmed the fat off the top and added your veggies in, that contains an amino acid called carnosine. And carnosine has been proven to help slow the migration of cells and improve immune function in the body. So there is a little bit of science around a bone broth when it comes to immunity. And there's a little bit of research around zinc as a supplement. Now, given that 10% of Australians have low zinc, and zinc is a key nutrient involved in immune cell production, definitely there's a little bit of evidence around that. I think you looked up some research. What did that?
So there was a big meta-analysis, Susie, and for our listeners at home, a meta-analysis is what we would call, a gold standard research. It's very good. It combines a lot of research papers together and sort of draws a conclusion from there. So the meta-analysis was published back in 2011, and it really concluded that zinc lozenges can help reduce the duration of cold symptoms by anywhere from 12% to 48%. But the kicker here is that you have to have a daily dose over 75 milligrams of zinc, and you have to catch it in the first 0 to 1 day of the cold. If you're taking this day 5, 6 of your cold, I think you've missed the boat here. But there were some side effects. So people in the research studies really did report nausea being a big side effect. And that, you know, when you take zinc, you get that metallic taste in your mouth, just that bad taste in your mouth. And also, we really do recommend against using things like zinc nasal sprays because they can actually cause a permanent loss of smell. So definitely not using the spray up your nose. The research really looks at the lozenge or a liquid because what you want to do is coat your mouth. And so it's attacking the virus from starting from your mouth, essentially, not taking a tablet because what I think the research really looked at, I think it was called rhinovirus, that sort of starts and lives in the mouth when you've got those colds. You really want that lozenge to sort of begin that digestion in your mouth. So a lozenge is, I think, the gold standard, followed by a liquid, and definitely we don't want capsules or the nasal sprays. But it probably is a good idea to just talk with your doctor or healthcare professional if you are going to be supplementing with quite high doses of zinc. But there is a small amount of research there that really does help reduce the duration and severity of cold. So I think zinc is probably the biggest one with some research behind it.
It's actually similar to a small amount of research that is available on vitamin C. Now, of course, whenever we're feeling unwell, we reach for the orange juice or the kiwi fruit and foods that are really rich in vitamin C. Now, yes, it's a very powerful antioxidant. And the research around vitamin C and specifically vitamin C supplementation of mega doses, so looking at 100 milligrams plus, shows it won't stop you getting a cold, but it can help reduce the duration should you have it. But I think leading on from the zinc conversation, when we're looking at immunity, if you're run down, your body's in a less position to fight something should it come along. Now, the link to zinc is that we know 25% of Australian women have low iron stores. Now, they have low iron stores because if they're meat eaters, they eat red meat sporadically. So they might have it once a week. And of course, one of the richest dietary sources of both iron and zinc, which are both intricately involved in immune function, is lean red meat. So if you're a meat eater, keeping on top of your iron levels and making sure you're having readily well-absorbed iron 3 times a week in small amounts, or if you are not a red meat eater, making sure you're having good sources of dietary iron from eggs or fortified cereals, leafy green vegetables, legumes every single day is going to help to really build that immune platform as we move through these cooler months. Now, I cannot tell you how many of my female clients are chronically tired, run down, and we run the bloods, and they've got ferritin stores that are so low, the doctor will infuse them immediately. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of women walking around out there who have a really low iron. Now, if anyone's going to get sick when they cross paths with a cold and flu, it's if you've got low iron levels. So keeping an eye on that, particularly a sporadic meat eater, is really, really important. And of course, what we've learned, say in the past 3-5 years, is how powerful gut health mm-hmm. is in directing immune function. And that comes down to our foundation of our nutrition and our plant intake and our fiber intake on a daily basis. So that's the other thing. It's not just about these one-off foods that we can add in and what to avoid and what supplements to buy. It's about making sure that your baseline nutritional needs are met, and specifically iron, zinc, and dietary fiber is going in every single day to give your body the best position of keeping the immune system at its best.
Absolutely. And I think the thing is, it gets to cold and flu season, or someone in your household comes down with the flu, or someone at work and you think, oh my goodness, I've got to prevent this cold. There's nothing we can actually do to prevent colds and flus. Or the only big thing we can do is not a pill, it's not a powder, it's not running to the chemist and, you know, grabbing some vitamin C lozenges or anything like that. The biggest thing we can do, Susie, is a long-term approach in terms of optimizing our gut health, because 90% of our immunity is made in our gut. And you know what the best thing is for our gut health? We've talked about on the podcast before. Eating 30 different types of plants every single day is the single best thing that we can do for our gut health. Yet tell me why, Susie, 95% of Australians do not eat the recommended amount of veggies. I sound like a broken record. It is the thorn in my side. Why people just, you know, we will spend thousands, hundreds, thousands of dollars on supplements, pills and powders, yet we won't eat our damn vegetables.
I think we do a whole podcast on how to eat more vegetables. It's funny you say that, because I was listening to a podcast of a well-known businessman, and he's one of those kind of gurus that likes to tell everyone how to be their best self. And he had a section on his nutrition. And one of the things he said was that he eats the same things every day. Oh, so no. Then he doesn't have to think about his diet. So he's thinking, I'm so smart, you know, yeah, I have
I'm
the
doing
same
the best thing.
Yeah, yeah, protein shake every day and this salad for lunch and then I have this meat and veggies. And I thought the irony is that it's actually the worst thing for his health because he's not getting that range of foods every day that we know is actually beneficial for gut health and all of these key autoimmune things. So I just had a chuckle to myself because it's a really good example of how what we think is right is not always what the science is showing. And I'm so tempted to send him a message to say, you know what, actually – you're doing probably one of the worst things by eating the same thing every day for your immune function. But I don't want to feel his wrath because he's quite out there. But yeah, I had a little laugh to myself because it is. It's about the variety and the density of the diet each day to give that varied microbiome, which is in a better position to fight infection and prime the immune system.
100%. And another reason why we shouldn't take nutrition advice from a savvy businessman.
Even though he's very, very successful. So you're absolutely right. So just get your nutrition information from the Nutrition Couch podcast and you will be fighting fit throughout winter.
Couldn't agree more. And now, Susie, that brings us to our most popular segment, which we know our listeners love, is our new supermarket product find. So you found a great one this week. I saw the twins enjoying it during the week. It is a frozen yogurt. It's the Twisted Healthy Treats. We're going to look at the chocolate vanilla bean one today. So this has been developed for kids, has it, Susie? But I think adults would enjoy it too.
This is a really interesting product story and a brand from Twisted. And this was a little Australian mum who decided that she wanted to make some healthier treats for kids. So her position was, I don't want to be a purist. I don't want to be giving my kids what can I think is sort of plain frozen yogurt and berries when they want to have an ice cream with their friends. What I want is to have a healthier ice cream. Mm-hmm. So she started with these frozen yogurt products and she took them around to school canteens and now they're stocked in 5,000 school canteens around the country. So it's a really big Australian success story and she now actually exports to America through Costco. Like she's been incredibly successful. So it's a great Australian brand doing really great things. But specifically, I love these little products because they look cute and they come in at 95 calories. Now, when we take a close look at the nutritionals on them, they come in at 12.2 grams of carb per 70 gram little tub, 9.9 grams of sugars, low in fat, less than 3 grams of saturated fat per serve, no gluten, 2.6 grams of protein. But the reason I like them is I feel they're really child friendly because when you go to the supermarket and there's like ice cream's not healthy, you shouldn't be having it. And when you even take a close look at the smaller ice creams, they usually sort of range between 8 to 12 grams of sugar. And what happens is you get purists who say, that's too much, 9 grams of sugar is too much for kids. Why are you recommending that? But then they think nothing about going to a cafe and ordering a banana bread or a cupcake for a kid that's got 20, 30 grams of sugar per serve. So I want to be clear that our message isn't about purism. It's about creating food that is healthier. But in the case of kids, they're happy to eat this and it has got a dairy base. They've got some gut health properties to it. It's an Australian brand. The ingredient list is pretty clean. And it's a product, as I said, the twins, they were happy to have it. So I thought it's a good opportunity just to chat about it doesn't have to be perfect to be nutritious. And I think we hear this a lot as dietitians. There's a belief that it has to be completely clean, pure. And I don't think that's practical or sustainable for people. So I like it. I think at 95 calories, it's a good portion size. It's good for adults as well. It tastes good. It's available in the supermarket. It's at a good price point. And I would much rather my clients be having this than a heavily processed, high protein ice cream that's got a million ingredients in it and is heavily, heavily processed, whereas I'm pretty happy with this as a pretty good food. What do you think? Because you said to me, let's do it. What did you like about it?
I wanted to try it. It looks delicious. I'm going to go to the supermarket and find it. But
it's Woolies. It's not Coles. I think it's Woolies. It's not easy to find Woolies product.
Good. Just looking at the allergen advice, because I've got quite a few clients who have celiac disease, so they need gluten-free products. And this looks gluten-free, which is good. So just looking at, there's no detectable gluten as an ingredient, but we actually have to consider the processing and the manufacturing equipment as well when it comes to allergies. So it says allergen advice is it contains dairy, obviously, so not appropriate for anyone with a cow's milk protein allergy. Also, processed in a factory that uses nuts. So celiacs are fine. If you've got nut allergy, you'd want to be very careful. And obviously, if you're vegan for ethical reasons or you can't have dairy, then not appropriate. But otherwise, it looks like a pretty good option for most people. It's got 25% fresh probiotic yogurt in there, and the top ingredient is milk. So milk and probiotic yogurt, sugar is the third ingredient, dietary fiber, inulin. So inulin's a great addition in terms of a natural prebiotic for our gut health. I would just caution anyone, I imagine the amount's fairly small, that I actually don't list the fiber in the nutrition information panel, Susie, but I imagine the amount's, I guess, fairly small being the fifth ingredient. But anybody with IBS might want to just be a little bit cautious of that. Inulin can give some people a few more symptoms because it is that natural prebiotic. So funny for a few IBS type people with sensitive guts, but for most of us, it's a great addition. It's got some pure cocoa in there as well and some vanilla. And xylitol looks like the sweetener as well. So they've added sugar and also a little bit of a sweetener in there as well to, I guess, bring down the overall sugar load. But overall, I actually think it's not a bad product. 95 calories per little cup, 2.6 grams of protein, about 2 grams of fat and 12 grams of carbs with 9.9 grams of sugar. I actually think it's a good choice. As you mentioned, it's not what we would call quote unquote clean ice cream or anything like that. But for a calorie controlled treat with not too bad ingredients, I actually think it's a winner for most people.
Because I think the thing with treats is if you have it and it doesn't have the mouthfeel and feel like it's an enjoyable, tasty product, you'll just keep eating anyway.
Yeah.
You eat so more and more. So I find people, you know, they have sugar-free chocolate and it's not overly satisfying, so they eat half the block anyway. Or they have an ice cream that is specifically formulated to be higher in protein or lower in sugar or lower in carbs, and it doesn't have the feel or the mouth taste, so they keep eating anyway. And when you look at, or they think this small tub's only 200 calories and they end up eating the whole lot anyway. And the thing I like about these is the cups are a decent serve, but very clearly individual portions. I think that's really good when it comes to treat-based eating, that we have portion control. And you know, it's good for kids. It's, you know, much better than them having an adult size ice cream, which is the problem I'm having with my own kids, is that suddenly they don't want a paddle pop anymore. They want a gay time or they want a magnum. And that's really inappropriate. It's much too big for them. Whereas this, it's really child friendly sizes. And as we say for our adult clients, less than that 100 calorie option is really strong. So check them out and let us know what you think. But I'm a big fan.
Yeah, thumbs up from the Nutrition Couch, and we'll make sure we post that one to our socials so you guys can check that out as well. And our final segment, Susie, is really around a listener question. So this one came through, and we actually had a few people asking this one on our Instagram page. We've talked a lot about gut health. We've talked a lot about how we want what we call a plant-forward approach. We don't necessarily have to be exclusively vegan, but we do want to include a lot more plant-based meals and options within our diet for ethical reasons, also for environmental reasons. You know, it's a lot cheaper budget-wise if we're including plant-based meals, and of course better for our health overall. But the listener question is, Susie, are plant-based meat alternatives actually healthier? So is a vegan patty better than a meat patty? Is vegan fish fillets better than actual fish fillets? Susie, what are your thoughts here? Because there's nearly a whole aisle of vegan-based meat alternatives these days, aren't there? There's a huge range.
There is, and it can be very difficult to decipher. So I think it needs to be separated a bit better, because I have been at the front of the supermarket and picked up like a burger and then realized it's actually plant-based, it's not meat. So, you know, I would appreciate it if there was a bit more separateness around the plant-based and the real meat products. Okay, this is a controversial area. We've got to be really careful with wording here. My primary issue with plant-based meat products is that the nutritional profile is so profoundly different to meat, chicken, fish. I think we run the risk of thinking it's the same, and it is so definitely different. So if your choice is to opt for plant-based products, you may be vegan, you may be trying to be healthier, do not assume that plant-based meat alternatives are healthier, because often, and not always, but often, when you take a close look at that ingredient list, it is a mile long, with a million different fillers, colors, flavors to try and create a product that looks a little bit like meat. If your preference is to be plant-based, you're going to always be a million times better for go for whole plant foods like legumes as your base, rather than thinking a processed meat-like looking product is any healthier. Yes, it can be a great way to increase your protein intake when perhaps the base is a textured vegetable protein, but they're not all the same. There's a big difference in them, and often you're paying for just a really heavily processed formulated product. last year we did a media piece on the plant-based shellfish, which is like a prawn product you can find in the freezer. And when you look at the ingredient list, it's konjac noodle, colour and flavour. There was literally no protein, no calories, nothing in it that you were paying premium price for. And if you were consuming that thinking that there was some level of nutrition in there was no protein, there was nothing, long-term it can impact your nutrition. So what I'm looking for in a meat alternative is a protein component.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't have that, I'd be saying, why are you bothering? Which is a bit extreme probably, but we're recording this a bit late in the day and I have less tolerance generally.
The caffeine from this morning.
So exactly. So I think at least check your protein. And if that ingredient list is a mile long, I'd be very, very careful.
Yeah, look, and I've got clients that are 100% vegan, you know, by choice, ethical reasons, that sort of thing. So ethically, of course, these products are better. Health-wise, most of the time they're not, as you mentioned, Susie, most of the time they're overly processed, they're higher in salt, they're lower in protein. Some are higher in fat too, particularly if you look at the way things are cooked. Like I said to you, I picked up some vegan fish au fillets and I found a vegan prawn cutlet in the shops the other day. You got to deep fry that vegan prawn cutlet. It doesn't make it any healthier than an actual prawn being crumbed and deep fried as well. So I think that the processing of it is absolutely an issue, the salt and the fat content. Some of them are actually quite good. Like I had clients find a few chickpea burger patties and beetroot burger patties, which are good options health-wise, ingredient-wise. But again, the protein, they had like 2 or 3 grams of protein. Then they're going to stick that between a big carby bun and add some fries on the side. So you've got a huge carb-dense meal, very minimal protein, very minimal salads and veggies. So they absolutely have a time and a place. If you're going to a backyard barbecue and everyone's got sausages and kebabs and, you know, you bring along your own, I don't know, vegan sausages, absolutely, that is fine. But if we're eating these things on a regular basis, and we're replacing multiple meals a week with these processed vegan products, it's not a great thing. And when the big Netflix film, what was it called, Game Changers, came out, I had a lot of friends who were like, okay, we're going to do vegan 1 or 2 days a week. And I was like, that's great, guys. I'm all for a plant-based lifestyle. Absolutely. Am I vegan myself? No, but I do eat a lot of plant-forward meals. So I was really proud of friends and family for getting on this train. But you know what they were doing, Susie? They weren't having lentil-based spaghetti meals. They weren't having chickpeas in their salads. They weren't doing the whole food approach. They were, instead of having hamburgers on a Friday night, they were having vegan burgers, or instead of having fish fingers with chips and salad, they were having vegan deep fried fish fingers with chips and salad. It wasn't any better. Maybe, you know, environmentally and ethically, yes. Nutritionally and health wise, no. So absolutely, we need to make the majority of our diet whole food focused when it comes to plant-based. And a lot of these plant-based meats and alternatives need to be treated like treats, essentially. You know, occasional options. If you're going to a backyard barbecue, if it's someone's birthday, you're celebrating, that sort of thing. I really do see them as more the occasional addition to a vegan diet rather than a regular, every Monday we have, you know, vegan hamburgers or something like that.
That sums it up really well. I've got one vegan client at the moment and she's been a client for about 3 years and she has really educated me a lot on a lot of the plant-based alternatives, and they've really increased in number, particularly in the last couple of years. I think the vegan plant-based component of supermarket is the fastest growing supermarket section.
Mm-hmm.
And my observation is that often they're high also in carbohydrate and, like you said, the fat. So for example, she'll bring me a plant-based schnitzel. And so she'll have that with vegetables. But when I look at the nutritionals, it's got heaps of carbohydrate on the crumb. It's deep fried. So the fat and the saturated fat is quite high because they may use coconut or palm to get those crumb to stick. Then the protein's always way less than a chicken alternative. So if a piece of chicken breast has 20 grams of protein, the one she'll bring me might have 10. So when I'm trying to balance the diet, I get too much fat, I get too much carbohydrate, and then I don't get anywhere near enough protein. So the guidelines I give my own clients is that if you're looking for plant-based alternatives, I still want something that's low in saturated fat, so less than 3 grams of saturated fat per 100 grams. And I want at least 15, if not 20 grams of protein per serve. And that instantly weeds out, I would say, 90% of supermarket product, because like you described, they're either mostly vegetable and not much else in them at all, or the protein is grossly inadequate. But the other thing I would say is that there's actually quite a few just healthy mainstream products that may also tick a vegan box, which have a strong legume-based or are using a textured vegetable protein. So I'm thinking I'm an ambassador for Lean Cuisine protein range that we've developed, and there's a SKU in there that's got really strong nutritionals, and declaring that association I do have with them. But that doesn't include that kind of processed base. It's got a legume base. It's got a textured vegetable protein base. So it's worth looking at mainstream products that are also ticking a vegan box, because often you'll get them that have got a higher protein level, because, yeah, assuming they're healthy is definitely not the way to go.
I love, you know, things like tofu and tempeh. And, you know, people will say that they're processed, but yes, and I agree, they are more processed forms, but they're not that highly overly processed like something like a vegan schnitzel might be or something like that. So I think the best thing I do for my vegan clients when they want a burger is actually just put a grilled tofu, marinated piece of grilled tofu between the burger, because you're getting that good hit of protein without all of the additional fillers and saturated fats and needing to deep fry it and that sort of thing as well. So absolutely, whole foods need to come first. And I think just be very wary of the whole plant-based meat alternative section. Understand that it's not necessarily healthier, and you still need to couple that with, you know, half a plate of veggies and salads and a whole grain more carbohydrate source as well to balance those meals out properly. I think it's probably the big recommendation for our listeners at home.
And I think that because it's been such a growth area in supermarkets, there's a lot of smaller brands who have popped onto the scene with a range of products. But the other recommendation I give to clients is if you go for some of the older school plant-based products, which is one of them is Corn. That's been around for many years. It's an English brand. Nutritionally, they tend to be stronger because they're more evolved brands. So they tend to be higher in protein because they've often got that textured vegetable protein base. And they may not be as flavoursome in the sense that they aren't as heavily processed as some of these frozen varieties we're talking about, but absolutely nutritionally, they're better. So that, off the top of my head, it tends to be a much better product that's got the fibre, it's got the protein, and trying to actually nutritionally mimic the food that it's intended to mimic, as opposed to being a vegetable version of meat, which just doesn't work.
And seitan's another good one. Just with corn, more of probably a vegetarian option, because I do believe some of it does have egg whites in it as well. Some corn products aren't 100% vegan as well. But always, you know, check your labels and read your nutritional analysis. Susie and I always say, don't be fooled by the marketing in the front of the packet. Turn it over and actually study the ingredient list and the nutrition panel to understand the type of food that you're putting into your body, put it that way.
100%.
Yeah, Susie, that brings us to the end of the Nutrition Couch. So proud of you and your voice for holding out for the episode. Listeners, I hope you appreciate it. Susie was happy to power through this week. I said, we can just pause for a week. We don't have to put an episode up. And Susie said, no, let's do it. I'm good. So thank you for powering on. You got through.
We can't let the fans down. I think, you know, we're getting such amazing feedback. And thank you so much to everyone who is following our socials on the Nutrition Couch Instagram. We're trying to get back to everybody. We're doing really well in the charts. We're so grateful. And I thought, you know, I'd be disappointed if on Sunday morning I can't tell you that we've got this great information to share. So thank you for your patience with my voice. And I promise I'm going to have a little break and get it back on track for next week.
Wonderful. And guys, what really helps influence our chart rankings and why we've been so high in the charts is your subscription. So make sure you do subscribe to the Nutrition Couch podcast. We love that you're downloading and listening to the episodes, but really it's a subscription that really counts for us and helps boost us in our charts and helps us get out, you know, get the word out about great evidence-based nutrition to people all around the world. So subscribe. If you've got an iPhone, we would appreciate if you subscribe in the Purple Apple podcast app, and also leave us a review in that Apple Purple podcast app as well, because that really does go a long way. And we appreciate every review. You know, Susie and I are giving you 30, 40 minutes per episode. Takes you guys 30 seconds to write a review. So it really would mean the world to us. And we do appreciate that. So pause this episode and go and leave us a review right now. We'd be forever grateful. Don't forget to follow us on our social media, which is the Nutrition Couch podcast. And we will see you guys same time, same place next Sunday.
See ya.